Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Hydro One Limited First Quarter 2016 Results Investment Community Teleconference. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later in the call, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. As a reminder, this call may be recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to Bruce Mann with the Hydro One management team. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. We appreciate you joining us. I'm here in Toronto with Hydro One's President and CEO, Mayo Schmidt, and our Chief Financial Officer, Michael Vels. We'll provide some brief comments and background with respect to our first quarter results, and then we'll spend the majority of the call answering as many of your questions as time permits. There's also several slides which we've got to illustrate and/or support a few of the points that we'll go over in a moment. They should be up on the webcast now, or if you're dialed into the teleconference, you can find them on the Hydro One website in the Events and Presentation section. And then just quickly, as the discussion this morning will undoubtedly touch on estimates and other forward-looking types of things, you should please review the cautionary language in the earnings report today and in our full-year MD&A regarding the various factors and assumptions and risks that could cause our actual results to be different. All that applies equally to our dialogue on the call. You can find our full-year and quarterly MD&A on our Hydro One website as well as on the SEDAR website. And with that, I shall turn the call over to Mayo Schmidt.
Thank you, Bruce, and good morning, everyone. This was Hydro One's first full quarter as a public company, and it's been an intense few months since the IPO. I intend to give you some insights into what we've been focusing on in the last few months. First, some comments on the quarterly results. I'd characterize our first quarter earnings as strong, with lower operating costs driven by continuing reductions in costs related to our billing systems and related support. These continuing cost reductions, which drove an improvement in our distribution ROE, were offset by the impacts of very unseasonably mild winter temperatures and recovery costs from an ice storm that affected a large region of Ontario in late March. The very unseasonably mild weather temperatures and ice storm were non-controllable events, but despite these early weather challenges, we're well positioned and generally tracking toward our overall plan for the full year. During our first quarter, we also announced a definitive agreement to acquire Great Lakes Power Electric Transmission business in Northern Ontario. This transmission asset is strategic to Hydro One, as directly contiguous on both ends with Hydro One's own transmission network, and upon completion of the transaction, Hydro One will operate 98% of Ontario's transmission capacity. As I mentioned previously, this acquisition squarely aligns with our stated objective of maximizing opportunities within Ontario in our core electrical transmission and distribution businesses, and was a unique opportunity for a high-quality asset management team as we continue to expand in Canada's most populated province. Completion of the transaction is subject to the Ontario Energy Board and Competition Bureau approvals, and we have made all the required regulatory approval filings and expect to be on track to get this acquisition closed, hopefully late this year. We've also executed a highly successful $1.35 billion long-term debt offering that was well-subscribed and enabled us to lock in some historical low rates. Shortly after the quarter concluded, we assisted the province of Ontario in their monetization of another approximately 15% of their equity ownership of Hydro One via a successful secondary offering. The offering almost doubled the float of the company, which has already proven very positive in terms of increased liquidity, and at the same time was completely non-dilutive transaction for shareholders. The province's ownership interest is now 70%, halfway to their goal of selling down to 40%. In terms of common share dividends, as you can see on slide 3, our target is to pay out dividends equal to 70% to 80% of net income. This morning we announced a quarterly dividend of 21 cents per share. Also, during the quarter, we implemented a non-dilutive dividend reinvestment program. I'd like to talk to you about our management team's focus and where we're spending the vast majority of our time. We're working toward a company-wide initiative to develop a comprehensive roadmap targeted at materially enhancing operating capabilities, building momentum, and moving toward best-in-class customer service and operating metrics. I introduced the initiative internally referred to as Moving from Good to Great on our last call, and we have continued to progress on development of a detailed, comprehensive top-to-bottom operating plan to move our organization forward. I've spoken before about our objective to transfer Hydro One to a performance-focused commercial organization that will generate consistent growth and value for our customers and shareholders. This has led to an intensive effort by all employees to build on our plan and then execute on that plan. When this detailed operating plan and structure is fully implemented across the organization, we'll measure our success across several core elements, and those will include building a customer-centric approach, focusing on our customers' needs, ensuring that customer feedback consistently and drives and directly drives our business decisions for further value creation. A sharper focus on continually increased efficiencies and productivity while accelerating the effectiveness of our capital deployment to execute on the multi-year infrastructure upgrades we have in front of us with precision. Making Hydro One a more personally and professionally rewarding, safe place to work for our employees as we significantly increase communication across all levels and locations of the company, engaging employees to create the right outcomes. We have implemented compensation programs and incent our staff to focus on the right priorities. And as we do this, we intend to build a world-class competencies and strive toward delivering best-in-class operating metrics that position our company for accelerating growth well into the future. While over time we'll look to potentially grow beyond our core, today our focus is taking the excellent set of assets and the employee base we have today, building organizational muscle and momentum, choosing to move from good to great. We intend to leverage our asset base and increase capabilities to even further accelerate growth and value creation. I have personally spent many days in the field with our people sharing the vision, getting their feedback, and understanding the Hydro One cultures. I am pleased to report is that we have a talented and engaged workforce in the field and offices across the province that are asking to be engaged in our future plans, are looking to be empowered, accountable, and rewarded for performance. They embrace removal of the historic bureaucratic processes, policies, and other barriers to enable them to be more productive and efficient. I look forward to following up with you to provide an update on results from the implementing and execution of our internal planning over the coming months. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Michael Vels to discuss the financials, and then we'll take your questions.
Thank you, Mayo. Good morning, everyone. For the first full quarter as a public company, we generated net income of $208 million and earnings per share of 35 cents. We also returned just over $200 million to shareholders with the payment of our first common share dividend since the November initial public offer. I'll start by highlighting a few of the IPO and other operating-related items that are outlined in our MD&A that make comparisons for this quarter a little less comparable than last year. Firstly, and I'm referring to slide 5, for IPO-related effects, there are two items to take note of. First is the divestiture of the Hydro One Brampton business that occurred on August 31st, 2015, which on a pro forma basis reduces both revenue and earnings. The second item is the impact of the recapitalization at the time of the IPO, which brought our leverage up to match the regulatory deemed 60-40 debt equity cap structure and results in an increase in interest expense year over year. The effect of the two items compared to last year is a reduction of $7 million of net earnings in the first quarter of 2016. From an operating perspective, Mayo briefly touched on the main items of note that impact the year-over-year comparison. The first of these being the impact of one of the warmest winters on record, which reduced revenues, although it was partly mitigated by regulated rate changes that were put in place at the start of the year. These rate increases are annual rate adjustments that are approved by the OEB, and as you can see on slide 6, had about a 0.4% impact on the total customer bill after you exclude other bill components over which we have no control or economic interest. On the OM&A cost side, We delivered some good improvements versus the first quarter of last year in areas including information technology, bad debt expense, and certain other items related to billing and back office systems issues that existed early last year, but that are now stable and operating to specifications. However, about a third of these cost savings were internal offset by the expensed portion of the recovery costs associated with the late March ice storm in Ontario. Depreciation cost increases, which tracks with the rate base and revenue increases. The remainder of our costs were either consistent or slightly lower than last year. On slide 7, you can see that we finished the quarter with a strong balance sheet and significant available liquidity. In addition to the renewal of the company's medium-term note shelf prospectus at the Hydro One Inc. level late in the fourth quarter, during the first quarter, we also put in place a universal shelf prospectus at the Hydro One Limited level, which will provide us with additional financial flexibility as we go forward. As you know, shortly after the quarter concluded, the province already utilized the shelf to facilitate this recent secondary share offering. On slide 8, we outline the changes that you see to our debt on our balance sheet, reflecting a very successful $1.3 billion three-tranche note offering that our fully owned regulated subsidiary Hydro One Inc. priced during the quarter. It consisted of $500 million each of 5- and 10-year term notes and $350 million of 30-year notes. The offering was well subscribed and resulted in attractive coupon rates. Proceeds of the transaction were used to repay a debt maturity and outstanding short-term borrowings. Liquidity remains very strong, leverage remains conservative, and we remain investment grade, A-rated at all three of the agencies. On slide nine, lastly, I'll point out that on the regulatory front, we expect to make a two-year transmission rate filing at the end of this month for the 2017 and 2018 period. In future periods, transmission in Ontario will move to an incentive-based regulatory regime. This is consistent with the transition that local electric distribution is undergoing in Ontario and will also be the construct for our distribution rate filing that we expect to make around the same time next year. And with that, we will now be pleased to take your questions.
All right, operator, if you would please go ahead and explain quickly to the participants how you'd like to organize the Q&A polling process. We're ready and happy to take questions from the participants.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press star and then 1 on your telephone keypad. If your question has been answered or you'd like to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Again, that's star 1 if you do have a question at this time. And our first question comes from Linda Ezergalis with TD Securities. Your line is open.
Thank you. Can you maybe help us understand a little bit more the degree that weather affected results financially in the quarter? Any sort of rules of thumb of normalization or anything would be helpful.
Morning, Linda.
Morning.
We do provide two statistics in our consolidated financial highlights, which is the average monthly 60-minute peak demand and our electricity distribution, which is the consumption effect. So you can see the effect there of the operating ratios. To help you a little bit with the dynamics of that, January was particularly warm, and that had probably the most significant effect on our peak load for the quarter, and drove the reduction in our average monthly 60-minute peak demand that you see on our operating statistics. Throughout the whole month, the weather was quite mild, and as a result, there was a significantly lower load and related distribution consumption in our distribution business. So in terms of the relative impact of that, the distribution consumption reduction probably had a slightly larger effect than the impact in January of the difference in the peak load. So roughly equally distributed between the businesses. In terms of rules of thumb, it's very difficult, frankly, to try to correlate the temperatures and the weather to a financial result. And if I actually had a ratio that was easy to use, I'd certainly both be using it internally and be providing it to you. But it does differ depending on the month, what the anticipated peak load is, whether you're in a period of very high temperatures like the summer, or expected high temperatures like the summer, or expected low temperatures in the winter, versus the shoulder months in the spring and the fall. So, the best we can do is highlight it and point it out, and show you, quarter over quarter how it impacted our numbers. In terms of rules of thumb, very hard to go beyond that.
Okay, thank you. And maybe just a bigger picture question. Looking at the Great Lakes acquisition, are you seeing, are you in dialogue with any other utilities in Ontario currently, or what are you seeing on that front, if anything?
Hi, Linda, it's Mayo. We continually stay in dialogue with LDCs or local distribution businesses across the province for many reasons. One, particularly operationally, we connect to most of those. And I would say that the Great Lakes Power as a transmission business was, of course, the last 2% that would or could have come to market, made it particularly important to us, and, of course, got a very good management team that came along with us. We're very happy with that. And there has been publicized a couple local distribution companies that have engaged us in conversations about the connectivity that we have and what we might be able to do for them. I think historically this organization has acquired over history almost 90 LDCs, and we continue to find them approaching us to say, how can Hydro One integrate these businesses in? Because I think that in the past, the LDCs, particularly we've got a couple in integration right now, have successfully found value in connecting to Hydro One's larger network, and not only the synergies, but the savings associated with that, better supporting their communities. So I think you'll continue to see that, but it's not a overall large initiative by the organization. It's something that we do as a matter of a natural course. We're also in discussions with Orillia and Peterborough as we speak, a couple local municipalities that have been in touch with us to see what Hydro One can do for their business.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Andrew Kusk with Credit Suisse. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good morning. I guess the question just relates to looking at the Ontario power market and your role within it. And I asked the question in part because if we looked at, weather-normalized demand over the last, say, 10, 15 years, we've seen a pretty consistent fade in demand. And how do you think about that as you look at your business? Because obviously the Q1 numbers are skewed because of a mild winter, but just structurally, if we looked at demand, we've seen a fade in demand for a variety of reasons. So how do you think about that? How that affects your business ultimately?
Well, I think longer term, we're certainly watching these trends, and we've got new generators that are coming online. We're thinking about, of course, disruptive technology that the company needs to be positioned to deal with. And quite frankly, the overall cost of power and how it affects people's decisions of whether they come to the province to set up large manufacturing business or exit. I would mention that we've had a significant number of consultations with our customers, particularly the large industrials, and identifying ways that we can work together to create reliability and quality of power for each of the businesses. So while there may be the slightest deterioration in terms of volume, depending, of course, some of it's affected by weather, some of it's affected by overall business demand and economies, we're finding positive ways to support internal growth. We've got a system that we operate and largely own that is certainly has deteriorated over the years. It needs to be enhanced, and so that's a conversation informed by the customer consultations we're having, that we'll have discussions with the OEB regarding the continuing to build out the system for reliability as well as also security of supply.
Okay, that's helpful.
The other thing, Andrea, maybe I'd add to that is over time, the OEB has directed us to move towards fixed rate billing on our distribution system. So roughly over the next 5+ years, as that rate changes is factored in throughout the system, the impact of distribution consumption would become significantly less of an issue from a quarter-to-quarter basis for us and over the long term, as we will be billing our distribution delivery on a fixed rate basis.
Okay, that's helpful. And then, Mayo, you mentioned earlier just the listen to the customers and what they're looking for, and I think you give some really good examples about trying to enhance reliability. And obviously there's a pretty big reinvestment window from enhancing the grid and bringing it back up to a much better standard than what we've seen. So how do you think about just the tension of a potential tension between some customers looking to wanting to export power out of the province to really distribution customers, and just on a pricing dynamic, what that really means, and is there a reconciliation of that tension, and how do you balance that because you have assets on both sides?
Yeah, I think one is the customer consultations have been quite informative, and what we not only suspected but what we learned and what we were able to build as a relationship with the customers was an understanding of the value and in terms of a cost for reliability and quality of power. So that was very, very informative, and we think it's going to be very supportive of the good dialogue that we intend to have with the OEB. Of course, it's the IESO that manages the flow of power inside and outside of the province and the associated pricing. And as Mike indicated, the base charge that's going to exist will further support not only stability and continued stability in our numbers, but also as we continue to need to invest more capital as we've done. And part of our job we see today is really to get to a point of a higher level of precision that when we have an approved rate base or an agreed target, that we hit those targets with a great degree of precision, which will allow us, I think, to continue to operate more efficiently. And I think taking, effectively costs being lowered in our particular business gets contributed back to the development of the system, which we're working really hard on.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Our next question comes from Robert Kwan with RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Good morning. First question here, just on the move for both the distribution and transmission utilities to incentive structures. I know distribution is probably a little bit closer here, but can you just talk about if you've got some thoughts of the framework, and especially just comparing and contrasting between the two, particularly given the O&M intensive nature of distribution and transmission being less so, what would you expect a transmission incentive rate structure to look like?
It's a good question, Robert. I'd say before I answer I don't have a very specific answer. We are still considering that. Clearly, the first filing that's going to be coming up right after our cost of service for transmission is distribution. As you've correctly pointed out, it's a much more OMA-intensive business. It's also the business that is not, at least from a benchmarking perspective, as obviously efficient as our transmission business. And it's probably the area where we see the most opportunity to impact productivity and efficiency. So I think it's definitely premature to speculate on exactly what our structure would be in an IRM filing. It would be for sure, at least and definitely on both sides, a custom filing where we need to ensure that there's a mechanism that incentivizes us to reduce costs and obviously at the same time retain a portion of those during the filing period, but at the same time ensure that the significant increases in capital spending and the rate base on both sides are recovered in the rates. So it's a good question. and probably one that we'll be able to answer at a later point in time. But in terms of the specific structure, can't really speculate right now.
Okay, fair enough. If I can ask one other question, just with the province moving forward with the large renewable procurement process, I'm just wondering, and this could be one of many more to come, I'm just wondering if you've given a thought as to what the impact of this and any future calls might be, and is this additive then to your capital forecasts if the procurement processes move forward?
Well, there's certainly several large projects that are, under discussion, or in some cases similar to the Northwest Bulk project, under development, and it would depend on which element of the province you're referring to, for sure. Northwest Bulk, for example, we are the designated transmitter. In terms of other procurement processes and potential new transmission, we continue to believe that we would be very competitive in any of those processes, and particularly, as Mayo said, as we sharpen up our execution and our capabilities internally, we believe we'll be competitive in those processes. To the extent that those are, projects that we end up developing and constructing, that would all be additive to the rate base estimates that we've included both in our IPO prospectus and our most recent MD&A.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have two questions remaining unless there are other questions. Our next question comes from Paul Lechem with CIBC. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good morning. Mayo, you made some comments in your initial discussion around consolidation of the LDCs in Ontario. And I was just wondering, have you seen the pace or the intensity of discussions pick up now that we're in that three-year tax window, that tax holiday that's been set by the government? How has the tone of the discussions changed since the beginning of this year?
I don't think we've seen a change in the tone. I think there, the issue really is the complexity of what the municipality needs or requires to create a transaction, and that might be, what they're looking for is obviously job stability, additional capital for infrastructure in their particular community so they can redeploy their capital. It seems to me just the view that we've had is there's a consistent number of approaches over a period of time, and there's generally, a couple conversations that are happening at one time with a number of them in the queue, but they're long and I wouldn't use the word difficult, but they're a little bit challenging because there's a whole process of education getting to a transaction, and of course it's not negotiating with one principal owner of the business. It's negotiating with a municipality that has many different interested parties in how those businesses are operated and who operates them. But I think what they're finding is the value in participating along with, in our particular case with Hydro One, we're able to consolidate into certain communities with some of our transmission business as well as the local distribution. So it does create both employment in the communities, yet at the same time, it doesn't raise our cost. There's synergies in those particular opportunities for us. So I would say it's consistently there's several at any one time that want to have a discussion, and there's generally a couple that are in discussion.
All right. Well, as we move through that three-year window, do you expect the pace of discussions to pick up? Or should we think about 2017 and 18 as potentially busier years for consolidation?
I don't particularly. It doesn't feel that way right now, Paul. There's obviously, if you look at the financial outcomes related to incentives, one would draw that conclusion, but the communities aren't necessarily driven by pure financial outcomes. They're driven by other things and other needs as a community. So the decision-making tends to get drawn out to a longer extended period of time. So for us, we've developed a methodology of having those discussions without obviously creating a situation where we're distracted from the primary focus of building out the transmission system and supporting our customers.
Gotcha. Thank you. Just a couple of quick questions on this, the incentive rate making and the move to there. How should we think about the base allowed ROE as we move, as you move into the incentive rate making structure? I mean, everything else being equal, would you expect a downward pressure on the base allowed ROE such that the upside earnings from cost synergies, cost savings, would kind of bring you back into the same range that you are in now? Or would you expect to be achieving an ROE above where the current base allowed ROE is set?
The very short and top line answer to that question is the last part of your question is yes, in a properly constructed rate filing, we'd expect to exceed our allowed ROE. That is the that's really the fundamental principle of a well constructed IRM. The regulator wants you to be incentivized to overearn your ROE, and for a period of time, on the assumption that once your rate filing period is over, which is for a long period of time itself, you're going to ultimately return those efficiencies to the ratepayers, and customers will benefit. In terms of the core of your question, which is at the same time, does the regulator sort of try and, I guess, maybe putting words in your mouth, balance it out by providing a lower allowed ROE? The answer is no. The regulator is actually aligned with us in that they want to incentivize us to make a good living through that period because it does benefit the ratepayers at the end of the period. So we don't anticipate a proactive change by the regulator on the ROE side. It's up to us to construct a proper mechanism that enables us through that five-year rate period to over-earn our ROE.
Thank you. Last question, if I may, on as you move the transmission business onto incentive-based rate making, do you anticipate you have to go through a benchmarking process there, similar to what you did on the distribution side? Are you already doing that work in advance so that you can actually move to incentive rate making by 2019 on transmission?
The way I'd characterize that is that the OEB has been very clear about their renewed regulatory framework, which has a number of components to it, and that would apply equally to transmitters. And certainly benchmarking studies and customer consultations is a very material element of that. In fact, as we go through the process of our cost of service filing for transmission, we're taking some care and effort to make sure that we are responsive to that renewed regulatory framework today. So we would be doing benchmarking, in fact, to support our regulatory filing for cost of service, and we would provide more benchmarking and also a scorecard for our transmission business as well as our distribution business. So I guess apologies for the long answer, but the short answer to that question is yes, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ben Pham with BMO Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Okay, thanks. Good morning, everybody. I wanted to follow up on the commentary around the fixed charge on the residential side with distribution, and I guess that's coming in the next couple of years, just with the decoupling from the volume side. Has there been any initiation from the OEB on the non-residential side to put something similar to what's going on with residential?
The focus, or at least the direction on rate changes at this point, has been on residential. So we have orders and directions in terms of how the residential rates would be changed and implemented on the residential side. So we have a fairly significant amount of clarity and a roadmap for the residential side. At the same time, the OEB has commissioned a working group on commercial and industrial billings, to identify what the optimum methodology would be for billing to larger customers, and we're participating in that, but no news at this point.
Okay. And then I was wondering too, with local distribution companies, the OEB has relaxed, just over the years, the potential for participation in non-regulated investments, and you talked about yourself also maybe looking at renewable energy, contracted power, so getting outside of your regulated infrastructure. I'm just wondering how aggressive you guys think you could be with maybe surfacing some additional growth in non-regulated as you move forward towards potential electrification in the grid.
Ben, this is Mayo. Thanks for the question. I would go back to what was the specific comments that we made not only on the roadshow but consistently over time, is that we're entirely focused on the internal capabilities now of executing at a high level on the transmission and distribution businesses that are 99% regulated. We've always felt that the strength of this organization not only is executing well both customer transmission distribution, but the fact that we've got a very, very strong balance sheet and that we are not attracted to get into necessarily businesses at this time that have a degree of volatility in them. So I think really for us, we look at 2016 as really the heavy lifting is building the competencies and capabilities. And as I said in my press release, the muscle in the organization to execute with a high level of precision and degree of confidence. And I think our heavy lifting over the next year or two really has begun with the two-year transmission, which ultimately would be a five-year distribution rate, is really replacing some of the deterioration of the system for better security supply, because our customers are talking to us continually about reliability and also quality of power because of the disruptions that even a fluctuation in power has to their plant operations. So I think you're going to see us stick pretty close to the knitting and really get to a high-performance team before we start looking outside of the envelope that we're working on right now. And, of course, we're executing on $1.6 billion of CapEx annually. So job one is to get to a degree of precision on that. So thanks for your question.
Okay, thanks. And the last thing, you mentioned the $1.6 billion CapEx number and a little bit of rounding last quarter with your forecast. And any change in the rate-based growth there? Is everything in line with what you've indicated previously?
At this time, we're not changing our forward-looking projections on capital and rate base materially. Having said that, as I outlined at the beginning of this call, we do have a rate filing for transmission that will be filed at the end of this month, and that will have some estimates of future capital expenditures embedded in it, and that would probably provide the first substantive re-look at what we anticipate our capital expenditures to look like going forward.
Okay, that's great. Thanks for taking my questions.
No problem. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, thanks, Ben.
Thank you. We have time for two more questions. Our next question comes from Jeremy Rosenfield with Industrial Alliance. Your line is open.
Great. Thanks. Good morning. Just one question, actually. As you go forward into the incentive regulation in 17 and 18, labor costs are a significant component of the overall cost structure for the organization. I know you have labor agreements that are in place right now, but I'm just curious to get your thoughts in terms of how you see those evolving as you move into the incentive regulation moving forward. Thanks.
I think that a couple things. One is your point's correct that we have certainly 3 years of agreements that are outstanding. We'll have to determine over the course of time how those discussions are going to go, and of course those are driven by many, many different factors. We're continuing to focus entirely in this organization on the cost and also how we can be more efficient within the cost structure that we have. So it really is about engaging our workforce in the circumstances that we have and getting a higher level of productivity. So I don't think at this time we've got any or taken any views on what will be a 2018-2019 discussion. But I think you can be assured that We're going to be focused on getting more value out of the existing assets and work load that we have today.
Perfect. Okay, thanks. That's it for me.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you. Our last question comes from Patrick Kenny with National Bank Financial. Your line is open.
Good morning, guys. Just on the Good to Great initiative, wondering if you could provide us with a couple key operating metrics to watch over the coming quarters outside of high-level OM&A costs and what your targets might be over the next 12 to 18 months. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Patrick. We're going to be at some point soon be talking about what metrics we might want to publish, but let me talk specifically about some of the things that we're doing. One of the things, when we get a particular capital program initiative underway, there has been times in the past where the organization has shown an inability to perform or to execute on the rate base that's been approved and has left a considerable amount of capital on the sidelines. And our intention is to identify exactly what needs to be done within a particular year and then incentivize our employees to hit that number with a degree of accuracy, so as we're not abandoning tens of millions or even larger numbers alongside of the highway that on our way to our objectives. So you'll find that in the G2G, as we call it, the good to great, that it really is getting that optimal performance about what's been approved. So really right at this point in time, the metrics are within the rate bases that we have approved on the distribution and transmission is hitting those numbers with a degree of accuracy going forward.
Okay, great. We'll watch for that. And then wondering if you could please comment on what you're seeing from your distribution customers on the home battery front, pairing up with rooftop solar. And I guess, how many of your customers would be pursuing the home power storage opportunity today? What might be your expectations over the next 1 to 5 years? And, just general comments on how that might impact the overall distribution system or present opportunities for you going forward.
No, thanks, Patrick, for that. There's a lot of conversation, some research, and I would say we're seeing in the field elements of particular, isolated circumstances where there's test models with 20 homes and battery storage and, really taking some analysis around that. There hasn't been any commercially obvious opportunities that are going to occur over the next couple of years, but we're looking at either disruptive or innovative technology carefully and closely. We've not only engaged in analysis around the organization, engaged our board of directors in, some insights into, many years from now what might yet come. But right now, there's certainly a lot of testing, a lot of conversation, but very, very, very small test models, which might be a couple dozen homes here and there that are under, under test, but nothing significant to give you in terms of guidance in that area at all. But be sure that we're going to continue to take a very close eye on it. We think about innovation as, there's a risk to being too early of an adopter and too late. And there's no shame in if someone else has got a model that we can adapt quickly, and we're prepared to do that too. But right now, our focus, as much as keeping an eye on innovation, is really about execution of the underlying rate-based approved capital that we have.
Okay, great. Thanks for that color, Mayo. That's it for me.
You bet. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thank you. I'd like to turn the call back to Bruce Mann for closing remarks.
Well, thank you very much, operator, and the management team here at Hydro One. I'd like to thank everyone for investing some of your time with us this morning. We appreciate your interest and your support, and to the extent you have any questions that weren't answered on the call, please feel free to reach out to Omar or I. Our contact information is at the end of this morning's earnings release. This concludes our call. Have a lovely weekend. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This does conclude the program, and you may all disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.